This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Michelle Martin in Washington. Neil Conan is on vacation. Recently, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention announced dramatic changes to its HIV testing recommendations. CDC now urges doctors and nurses to screen all patients between 13 and 64 for HIV as part of their routine blood work. CDC also says written consent is no longer necessary, nor is special pre-test counseling. Instead, patients who do not want an HIV test can simply decline or opt out. By including the HIV test together with annual cholesterol checks and red blood cell counts, CDC is trying to reduce the stigma of both the test and the virus. But the policy change is raising questions. Who will pay? Who will counsel patients if the result is positive? Will people really understand their options? Today, we'll talk with a CDC official about the changes, a bioethicist about her concerns, and with the Washington, D.C. City Health Commissioner about his city's new program, which already screens everyone between 14 and 84 for HIV. We want to hear from you. Do you have questions about HIV testing? Are you in the healthcare field working with patients? Do you think testing more people will help stop the spread of HIV? Join the conversation. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. Later in the program, it's the Talk of the Nation opinion page. Syndicated columnist Leonard Pitts on why blacks concerned about negative self-image need to look in the mirror. But first, universal HIV testing. Our first guest is Dr. Timothy Mastro, acting director of the Division of HIV/AIDS Prevention at CDC. He joins us from his office in Atlanta. Welcome, doctor. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
Why did the CDC feel the need to revise its HIV testing guidelines?
These new recommendations will help us answer a need for new approaches to reach the estimated 250,000 HIV-infected Americans who are unaware that they have HIV. CDC estimates that there are approximately 1 million HIV-infected Americans with HIV, and a quarter of them, or 250,000 people, are unaware that they have HIV infection. So our goal is to ensure that everyone has the life-saving information on whether or not they're infected with HIV.
Has this been in the works for a while, this recommendation?
They have been. These recommendations really are the culmination of a nearly three-year process engaging a broad spectrum of medical providers, public health officials, community-based organizations, various advocates to vet these issues. And they've resulted now in these comprehensive guidelines that we think will go a long way to allowing us to find these 250,000 people who are unaware that they have HIV.
Obviously, one would believe that you believe that more testing would help reduce the spread of the illness. How exactly do you think it works that way?
Right. Well, we know currently that when people learn they're HIV infected, they have two major consequences of that. They can receive care and treatment for themselves. And also, importantly, they take important measures to prevent transmitting HIV to others. We find that people's risky sexual behaviors decrease by two-thirds when they learn they have HIV infection. So most people do not want to infect others, so they take preventive measures to avoid transmitting HIV.
Why do you think more people don't get tested now?
Well, there are a number of obstacles or barriers to getting tested. Currently, HIV screening is offered usually to people within high-risk conditions or in settings where there's high prevalence of HIV. Unfortunately, many people don't realize that they have HIV risk, and sometimes practitioners don't ascertain whether or not the persons have risk. So a lot of people encounter the healthcare system. They go through medical evaluations. They're never offered an HIV test. They never disclose or reveal HIV risk behaviors. And so consequently, they go for years without having their diagnosis obtained. We do know that many people, about 40% of people, at the time they have their first HIV diagnosis, they already have progressed to disease-related HIV, meaning they've been infected for several years.
Now, undoubtedly, some of the people who are going to be tested in this way will be shocked to learn that they have HIV. And our problems in our healthcare system, I think, are pretty well known, the fact that many doctors feel that they are already very pressed for time, that they don't have the time to spend that they would like to have. Even people who are privately insured are often dissatisfied with their care. They feel that their doctors don't spend enough time with them. So if you do have universal testing, and this just becomes one more test, are you convinced that the medical profession, that the nurses, the doctors, everybody involved in the system who are already pressed for time are going to take the time to offer people the kind of counseling and care that they need to address this news.
Our recommendations are very clear on these issues, that first of all, we feel that testing should always be voluntary. Information about an HIV test should always be provided in a language the person can understand so they know that an HIV test is being offered. They should always have the opportunity to ask questions about the test and given an opportunity to decline testing if they choose not to have it. So this information should be provided. People should know they're going to be tested. And then it's very important that people have an opportunity to learn their test and the information is transmitted to them. And especially for those people that are identified as HIV positive, the first test would usually be a preliminary test, and then they'd have a confirmatory follow-up test. But it's very important that these individuals receive comprehensive counseling, supportive services, care, treatment, and then prevention counseling to allow them to avoid transmitting HIV to other people.
Well, are you convinced, though, that most practitioners already have the training they need to offer this kind of care, or do you think more people will need to be trained to offer the kind of care that is going to be needed? Just to address even just the initial diagnosis. I'm not talking about kind of long-term care because I would assume that perhaps specialists are needed, but just to handle the initial contact with a person who gets unexpected test results.
Our recommendations are one of many steps to reaching everyone with an opportunity to learn their HIV infection status. And really, it's just one step. We've had a long process with medical providers, and we're continuing that process. We're now engaged on a number of fronts with a broad sector of medical providers to address some of the issues you raised, the kind of training, the kind of information, the kind of procedures that need to get set up in clinical settings to allow this testing to happen. There will be a need for training. There will be a need for procedures. And CDC will be working with our medical partners, our other federal partners, to elaborate what we call implementation guidance, which will be exactly the kind of toolkits or information you're suggesting that would need to go out to medical settings that will be doing this kind of testing.
Is it your hope that practitioners will start this right now or that jurisdictions will start this practice right now?
It is. We think many jurisdictions can start this, and indeed we know that some already have started this. I believe you mentioned Washington, D.C., which embarked on a program similar to our recommendations earlier this year. Other medical facilities in the United States are already offering routine HIV screening as part of medical evaluations there. And so we will learn a great deal from these early initiatives. We've done a number of projects over the last 3 years, what we call demonstration projects, to learn how to do this in various clinical settings. But as we roll these recommendations out in more jurisdictions, those will be wonderful learning experiences to learn how to do this better.
And indeed, we are going to talk more with the director of the Department of Health in Washington, D.C. later in the program. But first, the CDC's recommendations are voluntary, but they do carry a lot of weight. And some critics worry that more widespread HIV testing could threaten civil liberties and place unrealistic burdens on healthcare providers. For more on that point of view, we go to Wendy Mariner, a professor of health law at the Boston University School of Public Health. She joins us from her office. Welcome.
Thank you.
And what are your concerns about these new recommendations?
Well, I have two concerns that I have heard from critics in the community. The first is that the use of opt-out testing often deteriorates into testing without a patient's knowledge or consent. And that violates the most basic right of patients, the right to make an informed, voluntary decision about whether or not to undergo a test or any kind of treatment. We had this discussion with Terry Schiavo a couple years ago. A second concern is that testing is not treatment, and there's no guarantee that anyone with a positive test will get treatment here. I think we all share the goal of trying to get people into treatment to help them live longer and better lives, but this is only a recommendation for testing. It can't create the link to treatment, and so the only guaranteed consequence of more testing is simply that more people who test positive will be reported to their health department and ultimately to the CDC.
But what about Dr. Mestro's point that it would encourage them to change their behavior?
Well, we can do that without opt-out testing. And in fact, if we took the description, the literal description in the recommendation and the very good description that Dr. Mestro just presented about providing all the information and counseling and voluntary decision-making, then it's not clear to me why there's any need for a change to an opt-out system.
I'm going to go to a caller in a moment, but Dr. Mestro, do you just want to address that point before I do? Dr. Mestro?
Yes, there is actually a difference between opt-in and opt-out testing. And we advocate opt-out testing, which is really to set up a situation where testing would be offered, and it would be the default, if you will, always with the information provided and the opportunity to decline. So it's proven over the last number of years that the requirement for extensive focused pretest counseling as well as explicit written informed consent have proven to be barriers in many clinical settings.
Dr. Mester, are you on a headset now? Are you walking around? Sounds like you're multitasking.
I'm sorry about that.
Which I understand, but okay. Well, thank you. I just wanted to understand what was going on. Okay, I'd love to go to a caller. Let's go to Columbia, South Carolina, and Joe.
Yes.
Joe, you're on the air. What are your thoughts about this?
I guess my question is, especially in the field, when people are coming in to, like, city centers or, like, county health centers, and they want to be tested, and it's basically a free service provider or a very, very small fees there, depending on their income. But they always have that option, you know, to be tested for HIV, but there's all these other, you know, blood viruses or sexually transmitted diseases. And there's always that big, you know, the check it off to have that done. I mean, if the blood is already being drawn and the testing can be done, why don't they just make that mandatory? And, you know, they can record and, you know, and also let these people know that are carrying this disease unknowingly, you know, let them know where they're at and what the risks are involved. So, you know, they might change their behavior, you know, like most people will when they're informed on it. I mean, we have all this large group of people they're completely living in denial or unaware
okay.
that they're
okay.
infected.
Okay, Joe, I think we understand your question, and Dr. Mastro's time is limited, so I think I'm going to thank you for calling. And Dr. Mastro, why not make it mandatory, very briefly, if you would?
We believe very strongly that all HIV testing should be voluntary. It should be voluntary and with a full knowledge and awareness of the individual with an opportunity to decline. We don't feel there's really a role for mandatory testing.
Okay, thank you. We needed to go to a short break right now. Dr. Mastro, I want to thank you for your time. Dr. Timothy Mastro is Acting Director of the Division of HIV-AIDS Prevention at the Centers for Disease Control. He spoke with us from his office in Atlanta. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Wendy Mariner. Plus, we'll hear from the Director of Health for the District of Columbia. Stay with us. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Michelle. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Michelle Martin in Washington. We're talking today about universal HIV testing. Our guest is Wendy Mariner, a professor of health law at Boston University School of Public Health. We'd also like to hear from you. Is universal HIV testing a good idea? Would it work where you live? Give us a call at 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. Let's take another call. Let's go to Kansas and Michael.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes. Yeah, I just wanted, are you there?
Yes, of course, we're on the air.
I just
so
wanted
you?
To add a comment that a couple years ago before I got married, I wanted to get tested, and my doctor, primary care physician, was doing regular blood work. And when I mentioned this, he says, well, you're better off just going to one of these clinics downtown and not do this through your insurance, because he said in the event of a false positive, he says it's going to open up a can of worms, or it's something like a bankruptcy that's never going to leave your record, and it'll be this, even if it's false, even if you go back and it's and you're healthy and there's no HIV, the fact that you had that false positive is going to all of a sudden cause problems in paperwork and so forth. And so he recommended I do not get tested.
What did you decide to do?
Well, I just had him do the regular blood work, and I got tested elsewhere, but it was fine.
Do you mind if I ask how long ago this was?
Two and a half, maybe 3 years ago. Maybe the testing has become more accurate now, I don't know. But this was at a large primary care physician hospital in Kansas City.
That's not that long ago either.
No.
Wendy Mariner, what about that? Do you think that that's a common experience, that there is still a view that first of all, are false positives very common? And I'm going to ask Dr. Payne this later when he joins us. But are false positives that common? And is it that still that stigmatizing that you feel it would be in some people's interest not to be tested?
I'll leave the false positive rate to mm-hmm. the physicians and speak to the discrimination. And unfortunately, there is still stigma, much as we would like to think that it is unnecessary and shouldn't exist. It still does exist, and it can cause complications. There are indeed some individual insurance policies that could be affected by this. And there may indeed be some social, housing, employment stigma that can arise. It's unfortunate.
But despite that, and thank you for calling, Michael.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That can it really be in anyone's interest not to be tested, even considering what you've just told us?
No, it's not that it's not in anyone's interest. And certainly, I think we would all encourage people to know whether they have HIV, just like we would encourage people to know whether they have any other kind of illness, heart disease, cancer, other sexually transmitted diseases as well. The question that we are concerned about is whether you need to have an opt-out testing system to accomplish that, and I don't think it's necessary.
What would be preferable?
Certainly it would be preferable to have a system in which physicians were encouraged to offer HIV testing. There's nothing wrong with that, and that's something to be encouraged. What we probably need more of is treatment programs where people can get the kind of care that they need, and ways to get people to that program: accessible clinics, accessible transportation, and when that's available, people are more willing to get tested because they know that they can, in fact, be helped.
Let's go to Leawood, Kansas, and Tom. Tom, what are your thoughts about this? Hello?
Yes?
Tom, are you with us?
I am.
Okay, and what's your question or your comment?
Well, I am a healthcare provider. I'm a physician. I am strongly supportive of the CDC recommendation that the testing be part of routine screening as patients enter the healthcare evaluation. There is historical precedence for testing. When I was a medical student, we always, on everyone, tested them with something called a VDRL, which was for syphilis. And there was, of course, a time in our history when syphilis was epidemic. It is no longer, and the VDRL has been taken off the automatic testing panel. But now we have another epidemic on our hands, and in some ways we are battling an enemy we can't see, and so it has grave implications for all of us, not just physicians, but everybody in the world. So I, again, in the short story, would be strongly supportive of the CDC recommendation.
Did you hear Wendy Mariner's earlier point that she feels the same thing can be accomplished without the so-called opt-out provision, which is to say that the CDC's recommendation is that the test be given unless the patient affirmatively chooses to opt out? You know, you have to put your hand up and say, I don't want this.
Yeah,
and she's saying that she doesn't feel that that's necessary, that that's a step too far. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I may have been out of my car and on my way to my office where I am right now. I think an opt-out is a cop-out, and you're not going to find all those enemies we can't see, and that's a metaphor, without making it automatic. What goes for one goes for all.
Why do you think that? Do you really think that many people will choose to opt out?
I don't have a precise answer for that question, but yes, I think many people will choose to opt out.
Okay.
I mean, you know, there's no science about this right now, but as far as percentages, I believe a lot of people will opt out.
Do you encourage your patients now to get tested, even if they're not perceived to be in what people call a high-risk group?
No, I don't, because I'm not in primary care. And I guess I kind of have to trust my instincts. I'm in an area of specialization that does, however, strongly encourage what we call universal precautions. Well, if the world was perfect, we could employ universal precautions, but the world isn't perfect. And using these so-called universal precautions imposes yet another burden on the healthcare provider, whether it be nurse, doctor, aide. I mean, we can't run around all the time wearing gloves with plastic masks shielding our eyes. It just isn't possible. We need to have a system which is applied to everyone equally. What's good for one is good for all. That's the phrase I used a little bit ago, just kind of off my cuff. Okay. The bottom line is, I deal with it to some extent every day, and I think it should be applied universally.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call.
Well, as we've been talking about, 3 months ago, the District of Columbia launched an ambitious campaign to test every district resident between the ages of 14 and 84 for HIV. Joining us here in Studio 3A to talk about that is Dr. Greg Payne, Director of Washington, D.C.'s Department of Health. Welcome, and thank you for coming in today.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
How many people have been tested so far?
Well, right now, in just about 3 months, we're already over 14,000 due to this program. We find in a given year in all of D.C., it's about 18,000 to 20,000 get tested. So we think it's had an impact, but it'll take time to make this routine.
What caused the district to institute this policy? This was in advance of the CDC's recommendation. So why did you choose to do that here? Not you alone, obviously, the universal you.
Well, we knew these were coming out, and let me just say that I think the CDC has done the right thing here based on science. They've really hit a home run, and it needed to be done. We felt, given that our statistics are among the worst in the nation, our AIDS case rate is the highest in the country at 179 per 100,000. Given that, the CDC recommendation, and the fact there's now a quick oral swab screening test available, which gives you accurate results in about 20 minutes. You need to follow it up with a blood test. Since that's available, makes it very easy to do. So we felt it was imperative for us to be on the leading edge of this, and we think we're the first to do it as a whole. And we began a program, Come Together DC, Get Screened for HIV, about 3 months ago, and we're having, I think, good success and good support in the community.
It's my understanding, though, that of the people you've tested so far, about 3% of them have tested positive. Is that right?
That's pretty close. We're doing it in a number of places. I'm happy to say we have a couple of our large hospitals are doing it. Our biggest chain of primary care clinics is doing it. Four of our student health centers are doing it. We're doing it in all of our Department of Health-operated clinics, including detoxification, STD, and TB, and also in the D.C. jail. So given that we're doing it in all the places we need to, we're finding a rate. And I think that it was stated earlier, over a million Americans have HIV. Up to a quarter million don't even know they have it. And given there's effective therapies now, and the point about changing your behaviors to not infect others, it's absolutely essential that we do this. It's our number one public health issue in D.C.
But what about Mindy Mariner's point that she made earlier, that testing people doesn't necessarily link them to treatment? And if this isn't done in the right way, that people are just left with some bad news and no way to access the care that they need.
We know that's a good point, and it's true. And I think we have all the tools here to do it right, which is why we went ahead. And I think if you're found to be positive, this is in healthcare settings only, which is important, you would immediately be referred to counseling. And we've taken steps to enhance our ability to do counseling. Moreover, insurance. The District of Columbia has one of the highest insurance rates in the country, over 90% between Medicaid, the D.C. Alliance, and other insurance programs. So we think we can refer people, get them the care they need, because it's very important to follow up that with counseling and the drugs and therapy needed to make it stick and make it work. So we think we're able to do that.
Wendy Mariner, I know you have to go, but just one more question. I was intrigued by the earlier caller who said that his doctor urged him. Suggested to him that he might not want to get tested if he really didn't think that he was part of a high-risk group because it have complications, that it could cause him problems. So I did want to ask, though, if testing were to be universal, wouldn't that be one of the things that would help reduce the stigma? That there would be, first of all, enough data. It would be something that would be a universal experience. It's like getting pulled over in your car in a way. You know how everybody kind of cranes their neck at you and you feel like, well, this isn't personal experience, of course, I'm not saying. But hypothetically, that, you know, it's embarrassing. But if it's the kind of experience, if it's the difference between being pulled over and going through a checkpoint, if everybody's got to go through the checkpoint, there's no stigma attached to it. So what are your thoughts about that?
Well, I certainly think that a good goal is to make HIV infection like a chronic medical disease like all others. But like all others, like heart disease, like cancer, like asthma, like migraines, it should be treated legally in the same way all other diseases are treated. And that means that the patient gets to decide with voluntary informed consent whether to get diagnosed and treated. So I don't see any inconsistency there, quite the contrary. But I do think that the notion that
okay, but I'm sorry, Wendy Mariner, forgive me for interrupting, but diabetes is not the same thing. Diabetes is not contagious. So I guess I'm just pressing you on the point of how is it possible that it's in society's general interest as well as that of the individual for individuals not to know that they have their HIV status?
It's not in anyone's interest not to know. The question is how they come to know. And it's not as though people are not aware that HIV is contagious. It's not TB. It's not smallpox. You have to engage in particular intimate behaviors, from sex to sharing needles, in order to have that kind of transmission. What we're lacking in this country is the kind of commitment to the prevention programs that might very well have brought the HIV infection rate down. Everything from better education, some sexually explicit education perhaps, needle exchange programs, and discussions that would alert people to their risk of infection.
Okay, thank you. Wendy Mariner is a professor of health law at the Boston University School of Public Health. She joined us from her office. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And I'd like to go to another call. Let's go to Berkeley, California, and Mark. Mark.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
So I work with heroin addicts, obviously, in the Bay Area here in California, and I see a couple of problems with doing this sort of mandated testing. And one of them is that there is such an emotional reaction to the idea of being tracked with something like HIV, that I actually think that could be an obstacle to people bothering. It's already so hard to get the population I work with to do routine blood work and physicals. And then the second thing, which is going to sound sort of abstract to some people, but it's very real for the population I work with, is that those that are willing to get tested are used to getting paid to get tested. So people around here get paid $40 to $50 for agreeing to pick up their results. And then finally, I just kind of want to say that I think a much more efficient way to go would be to really focus, which is what I try to do in my work, is really focus with people on understanding HIV as a treatable disease, as opposed to the emotional cachet that it has from the 80s, where, you know, you get thin and die in 2 years.
That's intriguing. Dr. Payne, what are your thoughts about that?
We have to remember, this is a virus, and it's a contagious disease, and we need to treat this like we do other important medical conditions. For example, cancer, we would do the colon screening. We would think nothing of it. Blood pressure, we check that. Diabetes, we check for that. We do mammograms, prostate checks. This needs to be on that list of routine testing we offer the population. Now, of course, it's voluntary. People should be able to opt out. We're that kind of country. It's a voluntary situation. However, given the public health dimensions of this and the individual devastating effects, 250,000 Americans don't know they have it. We simply must step up. CDC is right, and implement this. And we're working with our medical practitioners to do it, because they're the ones who do this, not health department. This is doctors and others in health settings, and we need to put this into practice.
But I'd like to hear more from you about how the medical community is responding to this challenge. But I'd like to ask you about Mark's point, which is that for some people, the idea of being tracked by the government is enough to discourage them from accessing this care. Do you think that that's true? Is that an experience that you've seen?
Well, I wouldn't use the term tracked by the government. I mean, over the years, HIV, we've moved to name-space reporting in most parts of the country. That was heresy a number of years ago, but I think people have felt, and it's been demonstrated, that it is confidential. We've never had a breach in D.C. I think most organizations around the country agree it's okay to do this, and it's the way to be able to manage the disease. The CDC's required it, by the way, in order to get funding in local governments. We're going to lose money. Others are going to lose money if you don't do name-space reporting. So I think we're at the point now in the evolution of this disease that we can now have the medical model do the testing and screening, get people connected to care, because it is a virus and it can have devastating effects. Here in D.C., we have a large African-American population. Do you know this is the leading cause of death in African-American women aged 25 to 34? Right there is a reason we ought to be doing this.
Mark, are you persuaded?
I guess I stick by my original point, which is that I think that it would be a very smart thing for all practitioners in all disciplines to really work on educating people about the treatability of most HIV cases, and that might help de-stimulate some of the anxiety, the tremendous anxiety that people feel about this. But I really, you know, drug treatment centers for a long time, for 25 years in California, have been required to force all new admits to get syphilis testing. And I think probably, I mean, there's no really track this, but just anecdotally, I think most people comply with that. But there are a certain number of people who simply choose not to engage treatment.
Okay.
And, you know, et cetera.
Okay, Mark, thank you for calling. We have to let you go.
Sure.
Thank you. Well, Dr. Payne, again, I think the last question, we are down to our last couple of seconds, is cost. How is the district paying for all these additional tests? And have you had to cut the budget elsewhere in order to accommodate the additional testing?
I know we haven't. In fact, the federal government's helping us out a lot here. The Health Resources and Services Administration, HRSA, and CDC are both helping us fund these quick screening tests. About $10 a test. We put 80,000 of them out into the D.C. community. So it's a very cost-effective item. And given the effects of this disease, we simply must do it.
Okay. Thank you so much. Dr. Greg Payne, Director of Washington, D.C.'s Department of Health, thank you so much for coming to Studio 3A today.